Mr. X is going to join the program right now. And Ed, we always like to talk with you about the proper method of crafting a meaningful public comment. How are you this morning, sir? Welcome back.
Bill, I'm good, and I'm, enthusiastic about conveying a few things here that are meaningful.
Yeah, and by the way, someone just called while they're here, and I'm going to see if it, if hopefully they're on topic, because if they're not on topic, then I'm going to get rid of them in a nice way, okay. Of course. Hi, KMED, KCMD, good morning. Who's this?
Yeah, hey, this is off topic.
Okay, well, if it's off topic, we're not going to talk about it now. Sorry. Nope. I said if it's off topic, I have to get rid of you because we have time to do here. But anyway, of course, I hope it wasn't because the world is coming to an end, but I'm sorry. You know, when I say if it's off topic, don't call. And so it's off topic. So off we go. So this meeting is going to be 5:30 till 8:30. So what do we need to be thinking about, Ed? Because I'll tell you, if it weren't bad enough that we're now finding out that the state of Oregon wants to put racism and racial equity into the way we teach mathematics, apparently, according to the governor's wildfire report, racism and poverty and the lack of racial equity has a disparate impact on fire victims, too. Don't you find that fascinating? I'm looking here at the conclusion of the governor's wildfire report here, and it just makes me wonder where they're trying to push this particular public hearing on wildfire recovery on Wednesday. How do you see
it? Well, what I see, Bill, is the information is there for us to continue and make meaningful public comment. Because when you start tearing apart these reports, and you can read the report, but go to the conclusion. When you go to the conclusion, you get what the governor's summary, you know, basically every aspect of how they consider it. And when you look at the reality, it's a tool that they're using.
Do you mind if I share? Do you mind if I share some of their conclusion here? All right.
That is material that needs to be shared. Everybody should read this.
All right. I'm going to share part of it. I'm going to talk about part of it. This is where they're starting from the in the rubric of wildfire recovery, okay? The primary goals of the governor's Wildfire Economic Recovery Council were to assess the impacts of the fires, understand the barriers and needs to start on the road to recovery and rebuilding, and make specific recommendations that would allow wildfire survivors and affected communities to get back on their feet stronger than before. Now then, I'll skip a paragraph here. Many families were already living in inequitable conditions, which is a direct result of systemic barriers that have been perpetuated by racism and poverty. The Oregonians with language barriers and citizenship status issues are among those struggling and have the most barriers, is a clear indication that the state still has a lot more work to do to advance racial justice. Now, what gave the council hope was the stories of the wildfire survivors who advocated for their communities and asked for more than just replacing lost belongings. They want their communities to be built back better and stronger, and they want their community members to come back and stay in their communities. Now, I find this fascinating, Ed, to see that wildfire essentially is racist, apparently, at least in its disparate impact. So, if a white elderly woman ends up losing her mobile home in Phoenix because of the Olmeda fire, well, I guess that was because of poverty, right? But if a Hispanic person, let's say, since they're talking about Hispanics there, loses his or her home, that's because of systemic racism. Am I misreading the conclusions of the governors here in this situation?
I chuckle, Bill, because it's not really funny, but the conclusion is funny. The conclusion is so far off. This whole thing should be dedicated to a direction to increase the ability to respond and stop the unnecessary loss of property and life during this thing.
Right.
Despite whatever racial barriers you want to call it out as. There should be no consideration to that. It should have been, you know, and
well, let me ask you, when we make meaningful public comments, because we can submit them written, we can do this, all right, that is a part of it. I know that it will probably be a real challenge to get on the list to actually testify, But you can certainly submit written. The first thing we should do is that racism had nothing to do with about who's necessarily burned out more than anything else. You know, we actually had state policies and federal policies that helped contribute to the burn, didn't we?
Bill, you are so spot on in that comment. And, you know, there's a couple of factors to consider here. One of the, you know, key people in this is Representative Marsh. Now, did Ashland suffer huge losses? No. But where do you think most of the comments will come from?
Ashland.
If we don't react, if we don't get off our proverbial rears and comment and give the stories that matter, we have no way to change the direction of the input of this. All of this stuff has to be considered on every level. When we look at this, it's like the inclusion of everyone is what's mandatory. The inclusion of the thought process of looking at true economic recovery is eliminate the threat of the loss.
But what they're looking at, eliminating the economic threat, means treating people differently according to systemic racism claims. Right? Isn't that really essentially what Kate Brown's government is trying to do with all of this canard about systemic racism within the fire somehow?
Well, it's basically rebuilding according to their image of how it should be rebuilt, okay? Their image of the considerations instead of... Now, if we don't comment, they have the ability and the right to keep going on their direction, okay?
So one of the first things we must do when we do comment is to take apart their conclusion and throw cold water on their conclusion about systemic racism being, you know, one of the main drivers of the wildfire losses.
Well, and I'll use an example, Bill, okay? One of the primary factors in the losses that occurred across all racial barriers was the reality that 10 years before they started a water project called TAP, Talent Ashland Phoenix.
And this was the water district plugging into the Medford Water District, and there was and there was a severe limitation on the capacity of that pipe, right?
That's right. And the biggest problem that the first responders, I'll use that term since it's so politically correct, the firefighters that responded had no water to fight the fire with, because very simple mathematics come into play. And these are the considerations that we have to comment to, because to protect from wildfire loss, we have to have the ability to stop that fire. So the water line that we're talking about was put in. It had a maximum capacity of 4,000 gallons a minute. It's all mathematics, Bill. A fire hydrant uses 1,000 gallons a minute. That gave them the ability, without any other drain in the system, to use a grand total of 4 fire hydrants.
Now this was 4 fire hydrants you could use and in the middle of essentially a super fire, a firestorm was burning through. Now, the question is, though, did any firefighters that were working this, did they have access to 4,000 gallons per minute of total capacity?
No, not at all. Because once the fire started and started burning places down, you had water from exposed piping. You had every aspect of it, Bill, that, impeded their ability to fight it because they had a lack of water. All of this water was not available. They, you know, in the stories that I have heard, all of these people had the same conclusion. There was no water. I watched an interview from the Washington Post at one point. These firefighters would come in, and they were in tears during this interview, talking about how they would pull up, and there was no water when they turned on the fire hydrant. So this, what I'm saying is that this is a focal area, that our infrastructure has to be done with a couple of considerations. Right now, it was done with only one consideration, how to make it sustainable for our children in the future. We have to conserve water. Well, wait a minute now. What about this generation? What about our property? What about our lives? And when I say our, you see I'm saying our. I'm talking across all racial barriers. I'm talking about everyone. The ability to respond and handle an emergency is simply that. You have to literally ascertain what your assets are, what your liabilities are. All of these things combined allow us to go through a response effort that works. Not one that destroys everything, with leaves us with what they talk about in one of the articles I sent you in Paradise, California, 2 years afterwards.
In fact, we had many people that from Paradise, California, that moved here to escape the misery there and were burned out again. Isn't that not the case?
That's the case. And you look at the mathematics right now, they talk about it openly in that I think it's a KTBL article that I sent you there.
Yeah.
The reality was 20,000 structures are lost. Only 1,000 after 2 years have been rebuilt. Think about that. Out of 20,000, 1,000 have been rebuilt after 2 years. So is that what we're to expect in Phoenix and Talon? Is that what we're in for?
I would dare say, looking at the pace of construction right now, and given this talk from the state of Oregon to build back better, which essentially is code word for build back sustainable development in a way that you can't afford to buy, you know, to even, you know, live in your own property, maybe that is the pace of recovery.
Well, the question that you have to ask is sustainable development models. Are sustainable development models truly sustainable for the long term for all of us? And the reality is no. They're useful to change society, to change the actual demographics of our towns, to change the living ability for everybody here. Okay? And all of these things combined, we need to provide input that's realistic and demand of our government the reality be addressed. That's all that I'm trying to say.
On that note here, Ed, hang on. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we'll talk about some more ways to frame a public comment and things that need to be said, because the state of Oregon needs to hear big time from Southern Oregonians, and it needs to hear from more than just people who weren't necessarily burned out. It's 10 before 8. You're on the Bill Myers Show.
Every job has a unique set of tools. One tool all jobs need is workers' comp, providing protection for workers and employers if there's an injury. SAFE is Oregon's leader in workers' comp. We have the largest network of workplace safety professionals in the industry to help reduce injuries, and we strive to make Oregon the safest and healthiest place to work. A commitment to safety. That's workers' comp that really works. Learn more at SAIF.com.
Huckel's Pump Service, the Valley's number one pump service company. Have these dry years affected the production of your well water system? Is your low water production affecting your daily routines? Call Huckel's Pump Service to design and install a water storage system to meet all of your water needs. You can have enough water to once again enjoy that relaxing shower. Call Huckel's Pump Service, 541-734-9000, or find us on the web at huckels.com.
Yes, there's been a mattress shortage, and Garrison Sleep is to blame. You see, months ago, we placed some big advance orders from the top manufacturers so that we'd have mattresses in stock for our anniversary sale, which ends Monday. So if you're looking for all the mattresses, we got them. And if you want 6 years interest-free financing OAC or 25% off just about every mattress, we have those too. But only through Monday and only at Garrison Sleep. Garrison's.com. We got your back and all the mattresses.
Never miss the Bill Myers Show. Download recent podcasts at BillMyersShow.com or KMED.com. Brought to you by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, driven by Linux, on Airway Drive off Vilas.
Wildfire recovery testimony being taken Wednesday, 5:30 till 8:30. And we're talking with Mr. X this morning about looking for smart ways, things that need to be mentioned, because the state of Oregon seems to be going down the road that, hey, systemic racism and poverty ended up causing it. Now, I suppose, though, that there was a disparate impact in some, because a lot of the most affordable housing in Southern Oregon, Ed, ended up being taken out by the fire on the Greenway, right? I mean, you could make a little bit of that case, but was it poverty that caused the fire? Absolutely not. It had nothing to do with it. At least I don't think so.
You know, all of these things, Bill, come down to the ability to respond. That's the simplistic reality to it all. And every aspect of this, we have to start looking and analyzing and thinking through how we want to live. Do we want to live in sheer terror or worry about fire in the summer? Where did it, you know, how did this happen? You know, all of these people, like, you know, and when I look at it, I look at it very realistically, okay? Now, you can look at it as, well, they mention undocumented residents. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, that undocumented resident who might have been here 6 months, 3 months, 2 months, a year, 5 years, however long they were here, that is the same priority as someone who's lived their life here, who lost all of their property. Well, at least let it be equal. At least let the people who have long-term connections and long-term lives here have the ability to reconstruct what they had, because it's all they had. And you look at it with the considerations, you know, the migrant type attitude, it's a migrant. It's not a person who stays here. They stay here for a time, okay? All of these things have to be considered. But in truth, the reality comes down to is the direction of the language in the documents. And the direction of the language in the documents, to me, when I look at what I put in front of you there this morning, mm-hmm. it's flawed in concept. And
So how would you suggest we structure comments? Because we can start working on comments over the next couple of days here, Mr. X, and submit them.
One thing before I go to the structure of it, what I'd like to do is say something so people have a clear understanding. The comment period is not only limited to Wednesday, okay? You can submit written comments, and they give the parameters on the notifications there. And that's where I would focus. I would focus on that, because in the time period that they've allowed for public comment, you know, where you're live and you're saying whatever it is you're saying, what's on your heart, that's almost immaterial, okay, to the reality that we can write a comment and submit it and keep this attitude going that we want to be involved in our future. That's what we have to do.
And I would also add that not only is their conclusion about the racism absolutely totally flawed, but it supports Governor Brown's larger political agenda here. I would also add that one of the main focuses means to be able to we must be allowed to rebuild as we had things, and not having to suck up to modernized requirements, which would be happening out of new construction. Might that be something to look at?
I would definitely look at that aspect of it, Bill, because the law was very particular in that, and I've heard horror stories that people are not being allowed to rebuild things. So the reality comes down to, if the law said that within a year we could rebuild what we had, why is that law not being followed? Well, that's the thing. There needs to be an investigation or a demand that they follow the guidelines within there. Because if you lose your home, okay, and you got to look at all of the financial impacts, all of the realities of it all, are you able to rebuild it as it was? And most likely, you know, in a lot of situations, you are. But the reality to it is the cultivating of a direction in society that they started with this has to be ignored.
Their goal, though, would be, I have to tell you right now, Ed, you know damn well, their goal is to not rebuild for those mobile home park people. They want that area devoid of people. You know that is ultimately the gangrene desire of rebuilding here in Southern Oregon.
Well, it's like a conversation you and I had over the weekend, okay? These are intrusionary forces. It's what they want. It's not necessarily what they get.
And we'll leave it at that, Mr. X, okay? Ed's with me. We're talking about getting written comments submitted here. Tom's in Talent. Tom, question, comment, fire away.
Yes, I live next to Bear Creek, and I thought that we were basically safe here because I thought the fire trucks had the capacity to dump a hose into the river and use gas-powered pumps to pump up to their fire engine and then from there be able to put out fires. Am I wrong? Isn't there some kind of devices that could be using Bear Creek to provide the water instead of this being limited to 4,000 gallons per minute?
That, you know, Tom, you bring up a very interesting and solid point, okay? The question is, where were the pumps? Where was the emergency management? Where was the emergency management truly focused? Now, you remember, Bill, you brought this up many times. They didn't even use the emergency broadcast system to warn people.
Yeah, the emergency alert was silent the whole time. Yeah.
Now, I know physically of, you know, in close contact with some friends that lost their home, a neighbor of theirs saved their home by using a power washer, okay, staying there and fighting it themselves with a gas-powered power washer, okay? They were able to have enough water and enough mist coming out of there to extinguish the igniting cinders that were coming out of that fire. And the guy saved his home by working his proverbial rear end off, taking everything in his life into account and fighting to save his property. Now, he was ordered to evacuate. They were all ordered to evacuate. Well, what happened when they evacuated? What happened was is that the assets weren't there for the firefighters to do what they, you know, what they could do with the available water. Well, where were the pumper trucks? Where were the actual supply issues when they were faced with the idea they didn't have enough water?
So is this something that needs to be, this should be included in comments, shouldn't it?
That's exactly right, Bill. That's exactly right. You know, you talk about infrastructure. Well, we know what after this experience, that wildfire, okay, you call it wildfire. I look at it as, you know, okay.
Well, this was an arson fire. Well, Ed, this was an arson fire, though. We need to make sure and make note of this. It is still an open arson investigation. And
that's exactly right.
And I noticed that I honestly feel that I believe that there is some effort to kind of cover up that fact as if somehow this was all just an act of God.
Well, that's the whole key. And where I was going with it is no matter what you want to label the fire, the simple fact is it was a fire. And it was forced into just unbelievable proportions by high wind. Every aspect of this, okay, should have been addressed in a pre-planning type thing through emergency management. And there should have been different levels of response. And I look at it, and what Tom brings up is exactly right. But the question is, where were they?
770-5633. I'll grab a couple more calls on this, and then we'll have to wrap for now, Ed. Hi, KMED, KCMD, good morning. Who's this?
Yeah, good morning. This is David calling from Phoenix. I just wanted to tag on. Yes, this was an urban city fire. This wasn't a wildland fire. This was all within urban growth boundaries and city limits and structures. We have signs all over the place. I have one right here. Free wildfire cleanup estimate. Mm-hmm. I heard from our Jackson County. Then it happened when wildfires broke out. Suddenly, miraculously, they just broke out. And then locally here, we have a group called the Jackson County Fuels Committee. Their building burned, and it says, due to global warming and mismanagement, when wildland fires broke out, our building was destroyed. So they're not blaming it on what it is, an arson criminal fire. They're calling this a wildland fire. That's part of the big lie. So I'd like that addressed, if you guys would, a little bit more than what you just did.
And by the way, Dave, are you going to, because you need to submit a comment referencing exactly that, right, Mr. X?
I'm not a computer guy, but I'm...
You don't have to be a computer guy, do you, Mr. X? I don't think you have to be.
No. You can actually submit handwritten...
That's what I'm doing. I've got a letter written. I've just and I'm getting the address today. I've got a friend who's going to help me.
Okay,
mail it.
Good. All right. Yeah. And
thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you. It's perfect. See, that's exactly what he just said needs to be there, needs to be in that.
That's exactly right. And every time that they, take a misstep and try to include social justice into it, let's look at the reality of, you know, our lives. Our lives are affected by their desire to achieve the perfect society, okay?
Well, even the name of the House Special Committee on Wildfire Recovery, but they're named something that didn't happen here. It wasn't a wildfire.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But these are things that will not come to pass. They will not come to be considered unless we force the consideration through our public comment. That's the simplicity of this. We can sit back and have all of the ideas that we want, Bill, unless we vocalize them and unless we put them in writing and put them in front of these people, they will sidestep all aspects of that and move towards what? Their agenda. And their agenda is change. Their agenda is demographic change. Their agenda is social change. And if you look at that, all you have to do is read the conclusion, read the 32-page document, look through it, read it, read the conclusion, and you will see every aspect of what I just said is true. So you look at the entire aspect of our lives, you know, being interfered with by this intrusion of desired change. So now you look at that and say, okay, I got to craft a comment. I got to look at my experience. This is my experience. I've been a resident of Oregon for this long. I've been a resident, and this is what I observe. This is what I see as a need to have change. I need to have our infrastructure change. And it comes down to that. It's an infrastructure of safety, which is what we had. We had concepts of safety, of protection of property. And the reality is they've been sidestepped. Sidestepped on every level. And hey, now I agree. Hey, it's an open investigation, every aspect of it. The reality is, how many people that were affected have provided written public or oral public testimony?
I would venture very few have.
That's what I'm trying to say. And this is our opportunity to do so. This is an opportunity to provide that. And the reality is you can take and send a separate copy to your representative of record, which is Pam Marsh. Send it to her. Send it to her so she has no excuse but to consider her constituent's position. That's the reality to it is. But if we allow Ashlyn to provide that public comment, it's going to be a fire is like so important and fire. Fire cleanses and fire does this and fire is our friend. And this is a wildland urban interface. And we have to, and it's not a wildland urban interface, okay? It's literally an area that's not developed in a way. Where
it's our cities. It's not a wildland urban interface. You know, to have the, you know, a healthy portion of Phoenix just utterly destroyed, that's not the wildland urban interface. And you're right. In some ways, we're going to have to submit comments this week to counter the deluded idiots that would look at this as a wildfire, as if it was cleansing the environment of those pesky people. You know,
right.
That's really where a lot of these people are going to come from on their... And, you know, the racist fire, you know, as it were. I mean, okay, so we're going to get to work on that. I already have the information up about this. I'm also going to post today the wildfire report so people can read the fake racism conclusion that Governor Brown and its people are trying to put on this instead of the fact that a crime has been committed against Southern Oregon, okay? You know, that's really what it comes down to. So we'll do that, and let's get to work here. And by the way, do we know what the deadline is for the submission of written commentary? Because I know that Wednesday is the big three-hour event online, but I just want to make sure. Do you have that?
You know, Bill, I know that it's stated in that document. I don't remember what it is right at the moment.
Okay, I'll take a look at it over the break here, all right? Hey, my friend, thank you so much. I'm going to grab this call. I don't know if this is a call for you or not, Ed, but hi, KMED, KCMD, who's this? Hello?
Hi, Bill. Glenn Archambeau in Phoenix, Oregon.
Glenn, fire away. You're with Ed.
All right. A question I have to send out to the public out there. When the fire burned, I stood on farmland. There was pressured water running down the pipelines that go all the way to the freeway. Why was that not used? And do we have a working relationship between the major irrigators, the irrigation district, and the firefighting community? I don't know of one, so I'd like somebody out there must know the answer to this.
Boy, I have to tell you, Glenn, that is a great question, wouldn't you say, Ed?
I think it's a wonderful question, and it's one that you have to consider. Because what should have been considered is every source of water that was available. And I've told you this before, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
What I see in Southern Oregon is that we are in a agricultural shift or change or have been. And what is the predominant growth of goods right now is centered in the marijuana or cannabis market of hemp. There is a large industry that was created secondary to that, which was water delivery. All of these water trucks that we see running around, they carry 4,000 gallons, 5,000 gallons.
One would have thought that true emergency management of Southern Oregon would have marshaled that as a resource.
That's my point. If they would have marshaled that as a resource, you could have had 30 of those trucks lined up, emptying and refilling, and no matter what the conditions, you would have had another source of water, aside from throwing pumps in Bear Creek, of turning on the irrigation flows, of doing all of the things that should have been done.
Or relying on a 4,000 gallon per minute tap to the city of Medford, which, of course, would be woefully underprepared once the houses actually start burning and the water starts leaking out of the system. Mr. X, thank you very much for that. Glenn, you raised wonderful points this morning.
Wonderful point, Glenn.
All right. And these are the sort of things that need to be commented on publicly this week. All right. Mr. X, we'll be back in touch with you. Thanks again for the call. All right.
All right, Bill.
Be well.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
9 minutes after 8.